It's exactly 150 years since the first British package tour came to Switzerland and laid the foundations of modern tourism. The man behind it, Thomas Cook. And we know plenty of details thanks to a witty Yorkshire lady and an extraordinary piece of luck. But what was the big deal in 1863? Dickon Bewes has written a book about that first tour, which is due out later this year.
The big thing really is that it's the first time British middle-class people could afford, both in time and money, to go abroad.
Paul Smith is Thomas Cook's archivist. He's in no doubt about what it meant for Cook and for Switzerland.
The significance of 1863 is that it was his first trip, and it then led to others, and led to a whole series of circular tickets and circular tours, both across Europe between Paris and the Alps, and also within Switzerland, which is why, you know, he's so important to Swiss tourism. And then the following year, in 1864, he actually goes over the Alps into Italy.
Reason to celebrate then. And one major celebration was a special week-long anniversary tour in the footsteps of the first party, which even entailed dressing up in some 19th-century costume. I caught up with the group, dressed in their 20th-century clothes, on their penultimate day in Lucerne. Thomas Cook accompanied the group in spirit, but that witty Yorkshire lady I mentioned was even more present. Her name was Jemima Morell. She was 32 years old in 1863 and was one of the seven members of that very first tour. It's thanks to her observant and amusing journal that we know so much about it. She could hardly be left out.
My name's Helen Mort, and for this week I'm the modern Jemima, recreating her journey through the Alps. I won a competition where we were asked to say in 100 words why we were the new Jemima. And I think ideally they were looking for somebody who was interested in the outdoors, who was a writer and who had a Yorkshire connection. And I'm a really keen climber and runner. I'm also a poet, and I was born in Sheffield, so I must have ticked all the boxes.
Ticking the right boxes was one thing. When she got to Switzerland, Helen had to take her role seriously.
Jemima in 1863 had to rely on her journal that she wrote on with pen and paper, but since this is the 21st century, Jemima, I've been blogging from the hotels every day when we've been getting to different places about the things we've been doing.
Has it been difficult to put yourself into the frame of mind of a 21st century Jemima Morell?
I don't think so. But actually, having read her journal and got very involved in that and interested in her style of writing, then seeing the places she was writing about, it's all made a great deal of sense. But I'm just full of admiration for her. Having worn a sort of crinoline dress for some of the week and also having done little bits of the walking, the idea of combining the two and walking over something like the Gemmi Pass in full sort of skirt and dress as Jemima did is just awe-inspiring, really. I can't imagine how she did it. And the distances they walked as well. We've been travelling by train and by bus quite a lot. I'm just full of awe for Jemima, I think.
Do you feel that she's a person on your own wavelength?
Very much so. I feel quite close to her, having studied the diary. She's very funny, very witty, and very sharp. And she's also very poetic. One of the things I like the most about the journal is that she's got some beautiful phrases that I wish I'd written myself. I kept highlighting them and thinking how beautiful. She's also very hardy. I don't think I'm as hardy as her, but I'd certainly feel some kind of affinity for that kind of spirit.
And here's a brief flavour of Helen's blog. You may deduce that the 21st century group wasn't as lucky as it might have been with the weather.
Grindelwald has a strange hold on the imagination. The Eiger almost seems more imposing when the top of it is invisible. I noted that the glacier we walked to in 1863 had retreated, and also that on my last visit it was not possible to buy a fluffy St Bernard dog, nor a Toblerone the size of one's arm.
You can find Miss Jemima's blog on www.jemimasadventures, all one word, .blogspot.co.uk. Miss Jemima's Swiss journal is unfortunately out of print. But here's how she recounted her visit to that glacier in 1863.
Soon we come to the glacier, where due provision for the descent has been made, namely a couple of fir planks with bars nailed across to serve as steps on which explorers are to hop down, regardless of the yawning crevasse beneath. True, there is a handrail, which when compared to the massive surroundings was more like a lucifer match than a balustrade. Here was a splendid chance for the travellers to display their courage and ability. Some of the ladies, however, thought it better to contemplate its wonders from a distance. Our gentleman and guide had a most enterprising ramble among the crevasses, finding a river, cascades, and grottos in the ice, though in our opinion the greatest wonder was their safe descent and ascent of that glacial hen roost ladder.
The whole trip certainly wasn't a picnic, as Dick and Buse explained.
Even within Switzerland, because there was very little infrastructure, they usually had to walk or take a mule or a carriage where there were carriages. So like over the Brunig Pass, they could take a carriage, but from Chamonix to Martigny, they had to walk 40 kilometres in one day. The fact that it was an adventure, it really was. It wasn't rafting down the Amazon, but for them it was an adventure. It was quite intrepid. They were going places they had no idea. They had real no plan. They were just going off to see what they could see.
It was not only Helen Mort who was keeping the spirit of Miss Jemima alive, as I discovered when I spoke to another member of the group.
I'm John Morell, and I'm the great-great-nephew of Jemima Morell. And all we knew was that she had been in the first Cook's tour to Switzerland in 1863.
And did you know about the diary?
We had a copy, yes, of the journal. I'll be quite honest with you. I hadn't actually read it before. We have another book on the family, Three Generations, and there's something about Aunt Jemima's trip in that book. So I had read it there.
The Morells were actually quite a prominent family, originally from the town of Selby, as Peter Williamson of the Yorkshire travel agency InTravel told me. He'd worked closely with the Switzerland Tourism Office in London in the organisation of the trip, and it was he who tracked down John Morell.
I searched Selby records and found her family straight away, and then traced them down through her marriage, first of all, and then through her brother. Jemima didn't have any direct descendants, but her brother, who went on the trip with her, does. And I suddenly discovered that her nephew became Lord Mayor of York twice, and he founded the university, and he was the chairman of Roundtree's in York, and a big businessman and philanthropist. Him and his brother set up the York Conservation Trust, and it's his grandson, who is on this trip with us now, who is now currently chairman of the York Conservation Trust. So it turned out to be quite easy in the end.
So what kind of family were the Morells?
They were bankers, because her father was a banker in Selby. His son, following in the footsteps, William Wilberforce Morell, he became a banker in Selby. They moved to York, and the family continued in banking and business down to this present day.
So, in fact, Jemima was, although perhaps we think of her as being middle class, they were kind of very much upper middle class as far as wealth was concerned.
I think so, yes. The ladies didn't need to work, obviously. They had servants. They went to private schools, and the family did very well and were very successful, yes.
Do you think that she was exceptional in the gift that she had for making a lively journal?
Not necessarily. I think she was certainly a gifted writer, and her writing is very readable and amusing at times and engaging, but I'm sure there were plenty of other people who were doing similar things. It's just that hers was actually left and found, and is the one we can read and see today.
And that brings me to the extraordinary piece of good luck that I mentioned at the beginning. Although Jemima evidently took a lot of trouble over her journal, writing up her notes in two volumes, embellishing it with her own illustrations and pictures she bought while she was in Switzerland, it evidently didn't become the treasured memento you might have thought, carefully handed down over the generations. Paul Smith of the Thomas Cook Archive.
Presumably she held on to it for a while and, you know, circulated it amongst her friends so they could all read about her adventures in Switzerland. But then we know nothing more about it until 1947. Because in that year, in a blitzed warehouse in the East End of London, these two volumes were discovered. And the only reason that we have them is that in her diary she gives a list of the characters. And most of the characters are only given a first name, so she is simply Miss Jemima, and her brother is Mr. William. But halfway down the page it says Mr. Cook, the excursionist. And because of that reference, and that reference alone, these volumes were sent to Thomas Cook's head office in London, and once there, one of my predecessors looked at the diaries, compared the dates and with the records that we have in the archives, and he could prove that, yes, this was Thomas Cook, and that this particular tour happened to be his very first trip to Switzerland.
But how did it end up in London? Because she lived in York.
We don't know. Nobody knows. Not even her descendants know. It just went missing for all those years.